Hello and welcome to another all-English episode of Neon Go's Ghost Hour. I'm your host, Benjamin Fiege, and before we start, let me wish you all a happy Easter. My today's guest is a creative force who is responsible for some of the most intriguing music of the last 20 years. Joan Wasser, aka Joan as Policewoman. The American singer-songwriter has released her 10th studio album, Lemons, Limes and Orchids, which really is a good listen, and is about to hit the road in Germany with it pretty soon. We talk about all of that in this brand new Ghost Hour episode, and she also tells us where the name Joan as Policewoman comes from. Before we dive right in, have fun and hit that subscribe button. Recommend us to your friends and family if you like what you hear, and if not, to your worst enemies.
Neon Ghosts. Ghost Hour. A pop culture podcast.
Your new album, there's one song where they say it's a bit directed at Trump. Full-time heist, is that so?
I mean, once I release a song, it is no longer mine. Mm. And anyone should make, you know, use it for whatever needs they have, and interpretation is, you know, it's the greatest thing about art. That is not at all, I did not write it about Trump in any way, although I understand why people have mentioned, have seen the similarities of the person that I'm describing.
Mm. You said once you release a song, it's out there, it's no longer yours. In the past, were you like super surprised by people's interpretations of lyrics from you? Like I said, wow, how can that be? How can they read that into that?
No, I sort of, I mean, first of all, I welcome it, but then also I know that music has really helped me get through a lot of rough times. And I'm certain I use songs in ways for myself to, you know, that the original intent was not that. And I mean, the thing that's cute is people say, oh, I can't believe you wrote this song about, you know, I had the exact same experience. And then they'll go on to tell me the experience, and it won't be anything close to what I experienced. But that's great. I mean, that's wonderful. I personally love that.
Mm-hmm. And the sound of your album, like, in a way, it mirrors the times we live in, even if it's not directly political in that sense, but it somehow is optimistic on one side, then there are songs who are a bit more pessimistic, melancholic. Is that strategic, or is that just a creative flow?
Well, I didn't try. It's just my life. You know, it's just what comes out of me. That is what, that it mirrors my thoughts. Those are my thoughts. It doesn't mirror my thoughts. Those are my thoughts. So very little is strategic when it comes to, I mean, I would say nothing is strategic. Mm. I make songs that make me feel, you know, that feel good to me, whether they are optimistic or really challenging what's going on out here. And the ones that I think are the best, I'll put on the record. So yeah, strategy is not something I couldn't write songs strategically. They just wouldn't come out.
It sounds quite different from the album you did before. And with some artists, you can feel it's like there's a strategy behind to, like, okay, I feel I have to reinvent myself. I have to reinvent my sound.
Yeah, no, I feel like any sort of strategy I might attempt, that would just be limiting my creative process. the last record I made was, you know, was like basically I wrote songs from one improvisational session I had with Tony Allen and my friend Dave Okumu. And it was just like all chopped up. And I like created songs in this very, very specific, weird way over COVID, where I had 24 hours a day available to me to make this that record. I could never make that record now. It took so much time and so much surgery. And that was a very specific sound that would only be from that, because it was all about using this improv that we did and chopping it up and making songs. So certainly my recent record is a, you know, I can't make that other record again. And I did really long for singing live in the studio while the track was going down, while everyone was playing, which is something I didn't do, you know, with the last record. So it just sort of naturally came out, naturally moved in that direction.
In an interview, you were confronted with a quote. I think one of your friends or someone you know said it's like the sexiest album you ever done. Is that something you also see?
I mean, I think it's the album that I feel that where I am most comfortable with myself. I am most comfortable with myself now. And I think that is very attractive in other people. So when my friend said that to me, I took it as you can see me feeling comfortable in my body and in my mind. And it, so I, you know, sure. I understood what she meant because I know how I feel inside.
Mm. Yeah. Is that level of comfort you have with yourself now, is that something you had to allow yourself? Like when you started out, people always describe you like someone with a bit of a tougher outer shell, or that's the way people saw you maybe. Is that something you learned somehow to accept or to feel comfortable with? Or
yeah, I mean, I think growing up, when I was very young, I certainly, because the world is so scary, I really put up, you know, I created some armor for myself. And, you know, it's been a slow peeling back of those layers through time. I've always been a very open person in terms of like, I really enjoy meeting people and talking to strangers and, you know, I just, yeah, it's certainly, I've gotten softer, which I used to think was like a horrifying thing. And now it just feels powerful.
Do you think like that armor that you had is also something that is just necessary or smart to have for like a young woman in the music industry?
I do. Yeah. I don't think I would have survived if I didn't. I mean, that was my survival mechanism. But I sure know why I had it. Made a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Do you think circumstances changed for the better now in the music industry, or is it still for women a very tough gig behind the scenes? I mean, on the forefront, you see much more female artists being like on top of the charts, like the Taylor Swifts, the Billie Eilishes, the Rihanna's, Adele's, and what, like the biggest superstars of the time one could claim are all females. But behind the scenes, I think it's still like very much male dominated. Do you think still there are positive changes along the way, or don't you see them so much?
I definitely do see positive changes. Yes, for sure. I mean, Billie Eilish is a great example. She seems quite, I mean, she's so young and she seems quite comfortable with herself. And it doesn't feel like she's really manipulated her image or how she is to please, you know, anyone externally. So, I mean, she's very inspiring that way as a young person. But in general, I see a lot more women musicians, drummers, bass players, horn players, guitar players. There's just so many more women not, you know, that are in, that are making music that are not singing. Because typically it's like, you're in a band, you're the singer. And, you know, for sure, like, there are just so many more instrumentalists that are women that are at the top level, you know. Mm. And then there are also, in that same way, more, not a ton, but more engineers, women working in recording and production and, you know, and engineering and live sound. And I mean, you know, monitor engineers, like, there's just a lot more women working behind the scenes in that way as well. I am sad to report that it's, you know, it's not, it's certainly not perfect. And, you know, misogyny is not only enacted by men. Misogyny is also enacted by women. You know, it's built in, baked into our culture. And, you know, so it's certainly there, but it's absolutely better.
Mm. Are you concerned that the progress that was achieved is now at risk a bit in the, concerning the times we are heading into now? Suddenly it seems to be en vogue to act like that alpha male again, like those Musks and all these kind of, Andrew Tate, all these kind of people who somehow have a cultural influence.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, it's really unfortunate and really just gross. And I feel so badly for most men who are not like that.
Mm.
I mean, that's just appalling to see anyone act like that. It's not, they're certainly not making it look appealing. It just looks monstrous.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm hoping that rather than people seeing that necessarily as like, those are men. No, those are monsters.
Yeah.
Because this kind of, you know, whenever we're dividing in any way and putting anyone in a group because of how they were born, no one chooses who they are born as. It's always a problem. You can't say anything is one thing ever. It's just, it doesn't create harmony. It just creates hell is what it does. So I'm hoping that these people, rather than, you know, these are male traits, because they're not, they're monstrous traits.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I also know that for sure that through history, we only have this much time to live. But as when you look back, things get better, things get worse. Things get better, things get worse. And, you know, things are, even though they look horrendous, are far better than they have been.
Mm.
You're now 10 solo albums in, which is quite impressive for, if I'm correct, you started your solo career in your 30s.
Yeah,
would you have thought that back then, that it will lead to this? It will be like that, it will have that longevity?
Yeah, no, I mean I did never want to be a singer. I never wanted to be a songwriter. I didn't care about any of that. I studied classical violin through university, and I loved it so much. But then I also knew I didn't want to be a professional classical player. I wanted to figure out how to make the instrument more flexible, more innovative. I started playing in all different kinds of bands. That was like what I thought I was going to be doing. I thought I was going to be a sort of experimental string player.
Mm.
And, you know, the fun thing about life is that things don't turn out the way you expect. And, you know, when you allow yourself to change what you think, you know, I taught myself guitar. I taught myself piano, and I started to figure out how to write songs. And then I just got the bug, you know, I just got the obsession with like writing songs, and put out my first full length album when I was 36.
Does that somehow impact you in some kind of sense? Like, when you start so late to be like front and center singing is also something I feel like more vulnerable than playing an instrument, probably. Does that have an effect on you in terms of maybe like stage fright or something? Do you deal with such issues maybe more because you started that so late or later in your life, so to speak? Or does that not affect you at all?
Yeah, great question. I haven't ever really had too much stage fright. I tend to really feel like a person among persons, and that we're all persons, you know, I'm not really so afraid of people or of crowds. I've just always been like that. That being said, it's certainly, you know, it took me a while to feel comfortable singing, for sure. I mean, it's not like I wasn't absolutely terrified when I first started singing. It's so, like you said, it's so vulnerable and exposing. But something I do clearly like is taking chances, you know, and sort of throwing myself into situations that I haven't been in, or I don't know what's going to happen. You know, mostly that works out. sometimes it doesn't. But with music, you know, it really, even if I fail, you know, I consider failing. I certainly have learned something. But I mean, I think the thing that it did, that putting out records starting in my mid-30s did, was at that point I had something to say. You know, if I had started writing songs when I was, you know, a teenager, I'm going to say for sure I would not want to hear those lyrics right now.
Mm.
You know? Like, they would just be, I'm mad and I don't know why, basically, you know. So, you know, I got some life in, And then I had something to say. And I had some sort of emotional vocabulary with which to present it in a song.
But you have no problem to also step back from the microphone and still play the instrument. I think you did that for Iggy Pop recently. Yeah, you played the violin again.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's the other thing about Starting Late is that I played as part of the band. I was one of the band. I was a band member for many years before I became a band leader. And so I am very aware of what an instrumentalist does in a band, both physically and emotionally, you know. So that also, I feel like, really comes through in the way that I interact with the people on stage with me, etc. I do love stepping back and letting someone else be the front person, especially when it's Iggy Pop. He's touring most of the time of the year that I'm touring, but I'm getting to do a month of touring with him in the summer. So I'm really looking forward to that. And that'll be so fun for me. I don't have to be running the show. I'm just back here playing like overdriven Wurlitzer and like singing, you know, Lust for Life. You know, it's like, it's really like just eating cake.
Yeah. Yeah, he's still awesome on stage. I saw him. I will never forget it. I saw him 2 years ago in Frankfurt. Will also not forget it because it's the one time I caught COVID. Was at it. But
oh well,
no regrets.
Worth it.
Was still okay.
Worth it.
Your name was inspired by Angie Dickinson. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, in light of starting to, you know, to present my own songs, in about 2002, I started playing solo shows under my given name, and people, because they didn't know I was writing songs, thought I was doing solo violin shows. So I had to create a name for the music that I was making, the songwriting. And my friend Ruben saw me on the street, and I was wearing some sort of like polyester pantsuit or something. And he said, Joan, you're channeling Angie from Police Woman. And Police Woman was a show that ran from 1974 to 1976, starring Angie Dickinson. And it was kind of like Charlie's Angels. And I was blonde at the time too. So, you know, anyway, that was that. And the name just stuck. Also, I really liked absurdity and just ridiculousness. So, I mean, it works for me. My music is not absurd or ridiculous, but the name is.
You ever met her or something?
Say it again.
You ever met her, Angie Dickinson, or were in touch with her?
I never have. No, I never did. No.
In Germany?
Her ex-husband, Bert Bacharach.
Okay.
We played a show together in like maybe 2010 or something. And I met him then, maybe 2012. Yeah, that was really fun.
In Germany, the name of the show was not Police Woman, by the way. It was Makeup and Pistols. Makeup und Pistolen. You chose the better name for sure.
As Makeup and Pistols. Wow. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Your tour, you're on tour soon, including Germany.
Yeah.
Your craziest tour experience to date. Is there anything you can share?
I was playing Milan, and it was my birthday. So it was in the middle of the summer. And so we were playing outdoors at this, you know, how Italy can do with these like incredible old, like sort of just gazebo, you know, crazy like gazebos with like all these like, you know, like ornate, you know, insane. And out of nowhere, the clouds rolled in and it just started downpouring. Like literally it was like sky. I mean, it was like, you know, a beautiful like starry night. And then it was like, bam. And people, there was nowhere to go. The stage was covered, but the field was not covered. And so the stage was massive. So I got everyone to get on stage with me.
Oh, that's cool.
And the security was like, no, no, no. And I was like, yes, yes. And so then they were helping people on stage and we finished the show with everyone standing around us. Not everybody made it. A bunch of people ran the other direction. But the people that were like up front, everyone got on stage and we finished the show that way. So that was pretty fun.
Well, that's cool. Heidelberg will be an indoor show, of course. What can fans expect from your concert in Heidelberg?
Yeah, this is a solo show. So I'll be playing electric guitar and I will be playing piano, not at the same time.
Okay, I have to give you a heads up. Heidelberg, I don't know if you have been there before, is a very neat and very clean city. Since I read in an interview that clean cities make you nervous.
No, I really love them. They feel extremely foreign because I live in New York City. Mm. You know, which is it's a sort of messiness feels quite clean to me. I hope you come to the show.
I'm at the show.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're out of time. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. And then
thank you so much.
See you in Heidelberg.
Okay. Have a beautiful night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now a message from our sponsors.
The World Talks About Africa. But when you want real insights, it crickets. That's why we built Raw Academy. Access in-depth insights from Africa's top entrepreneurs, investors, and industry leaders. Not just headlines, but real strategies, real opportunities. Discover high-growth sectors, navigate emerging markets, and learn the nuances that drive success. At Raw, we give you the tools to make decisions that are smart, strategic, and profitable. From tech and startups to agriculture and energy, we connect you to Africa's most promising sectors. This isn't about charity, it's about opportunity. Business leaders, investors, and entrepreneurs, it's time to take action. Visit the Raw website at resources.raw.academy. Gain the knowledge, make the move, and own the future.